you on the air.
Dude, what about this theme?
More 80s power ballad.
It still gets me pumped up, doesn't it?
Listen to this theme,
every
guys.
Time.
The iconic theme of the Four Horsemen, guys.
I'm getting stronger just listening to it.
We welcome to Below the Belt Show, legendary wrestling manager, manager of the Four Horsemen, WWE Hall of Famer, J.J. Dillon.
All right, hey, what an intro that is. I'm a little bit late calling in, but Flair taught me real early on. He said, make sure that you always show up a little bit late and make sure you got a grand entrance.
Nice, and we hope
that
you like...
That sounds like Flair. That sounds like something Rick would
I've
say.
Seen some of those grand entrances.
Yeah.
I hope you like the entrance. We had to dig up the Four Horsemen theme.
Yes, I like that. I do. I don't know that... If there was an official Four Horsemen theme, but apparently that's been adopted over a period of time, and it works for me.
I mean, that was later, I think, in the WCW days.
Yes, that was the official.
Later.
Yes, yes. And, of course, here in the DMV area, we're going to see a little bit of a reunion of the Four Horsemen.
A big reunion.
Yes, at MCW Pro Wrestling's Four Horsemen event.
Yes, Horseman Anniversary, which will take place this Saturday in Joppa, Maryland at the MCW Arena. Tickets are available now at mcwprowrestling.com. And our guest who is on the phone right now, J.J. Dillon, will be joining us along with Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, and the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. J.J., how rare is it that all five of you are together at one time?
Well, we were together when we were inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame at WrestleMania in 2012. It was 6 years later, which was approximately a week ago, at the arena in Philadelphia. It was the first time in 6 years that we were all together. And now here, less than 2 weeks later, we're all going to appear for MCW in Joppa, Maryland, starting at 4 o'clock on Saturday, February 17th. And that's a short trip for me. I live in Delaware.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, I know when I got to Philly, it's like, you know, all of a sudden we see each other and there's a bond with the Horsemen that, you know, everybody, oh, the Horsemen, it's just no, it's not just a. There's a legitimate bond with all of us, and especially it was the. Seeing Rick in Philly was the first time since he had the health scare a little over a year ago, and talking to Wendy, you know, I said, God, Rick looks the same. She said, yeah, he had lost about 40 pounds, but put it back on, looked just like himself. Tully just doesn't seem to change. Arn is always Arn. You know, you never know what he's going to say, but whatever it is, you're going to laugh. And then Barry Windham is just... every time I see Barry, it's like Blackjack Mulligan reincarnated. He just is a huge man, and you know that DNA of Blackjack Mulligan is is through his veins. And you know Barry Windham, I saw him when he was when I was working with Blackjack and Murdoch in Texas, and Barry was just a skinny 17-year-old kid hauling the ring truck around. So I've watched him mature and grow up to really be one of the huge, great attraction
well, how
all
great,
time in our profession.
Right. Well, how great is this reunion then? Because, I mean, it had to be pretty stressful during the time when Flair was in the hospital and it was a touch-and-go time, especially, you know, a good friend like that for you.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I mean, I remember when the plane crash in Wilmington, North Carolina, and Flair was in that, the pilot was killed, so they ran out of fuel. And you got six passengers in a six-passenger Cessna plane. So with all the luggage, and I'm sure probably they were at the weight limit, if not over it, and ran out of fuel and crashed. Flair broke his back, and a lot of people wrote him off and said, that's it, his career's over, he'll never wrestle again. And, of course, Flair defied the odds makers, came back, and continued to be the Nature Boy. And then, you know, the episode approximately a year ago where he was in a coma.
Yep.
And a lot of people, again, said maybe this is it, you know, that You know, even a cat only has 9 lives.
Right.
Rick bounced back from that. So seeing him last week in Philadelphia, or a little over a week ago, was the first time that I'd seen him since, you know, his bout with fate, and he overcame that. And gee, he looks so good. Wendy was with him, and she said he had lost 40 pounds. Of course, by the time I saw him, you know, he got his weight back on. You know, he doesn't age. He looks great. And then with Tully there and Arn there and Barry, you know, we come from all four corners of the world, it seems, and to coordinate all of us being one place at one time. It was 6 years from when we were inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame in Miami till Philly, and here we are less than 2 weeks later, you know, coming to MCW in Joppa, Maryland. And I'm excited that we're all going to be together again, and I'm sure we'll have a few laughs and tell some more stories.
Well, I know everyone in Baltimore is looking forward to seeing you and the Horsemen back here in Baltimore. Can you tell us, like, I guess some of your favorite Baltimore memories? I know that, you know, there's some you probably can't tell. And how often did you go to, like, Sabatino's?
Well, I was going to say Sabatino's.
Yes,
and,
yes.
One of the greatest Italian food restaurants.
Isn't it great?
Anywhere in the world.
What's your
and
favorite dish there?
We always knew we were going to go there and leave filled. And of course, there'd always be, you know, plenty of beer to toast. And, you know, since Flair had his health episode, that's one thing that I think, well, I know that the doctors told him that the next drink, and it could be and probably would be the last one. And so that was a real wake-up call for Rick. And I think maybe it was a blessing in disguise, because it's going to probably add years and years to his life. He always was
a physical
phenomenon to start with. Survived that plane crash. He's always been into, when he was real young, if you saw pictures of him when he was 300 pounds, he was pushing heavy weights back in Minnesota, and since I've been around him during the glory years of my career, it's all been cardio, and so he's in phenomenal shape, and I think he could go back in the ring and give a lot of these youngsters a run for their money.
But really?
Damn straight.
Yeah, I believe that. He looks great, and just,
okay. You
know, we get together, it's a celebration, I know, for the fans, because they... You know, they tell us that, but we legitimately enjoy the opportunity for each of us to get together again and to see each other and tell the stories and have some laughs. And we owe so much to the fans. I have always said this throughout my career, and I know Rick and Arn and Tully feel that way too, that the reputation and the phenomena of the Four Horsemen, of which Flair was our leader as a champion for as long as he was. But, you know, it's the fans. It's really the fans that put us up there on that pedestal. I give kudos to Flair, because I think he would have been great no matter what happened. And I have to say the same thing about Tully, because I've watched him since early in his career, worked for Joe Blanchard. I think Barry Windham actually had his first professional match with me when he was hauling the ring around in Amarillo, when Blackjack Mulligan and Dick Murdoch had bought the territory from the Funks, and Barry was hauling the ring and so much wanting to get the tights on and be in the ring. And one night, without telling Blackjack, we told him to bring his tights in. So Barry had his first professional match with me in Odessa, Texas, not in front of a whole sold-out crowd, but that broke the ice, and I knew that night that he was destined to be a huge, huge star in our business.
Now, I have a question, JJ. There's been, I guess, different members of the Four Horsemen over the years. Do you feel that the four that is going to be showing up in Baltimore are the best representatives of the Four Horsemen?
I think that says it perfectly. And, again, I never forget Ole. Ole was the original Horseman, where Barry wasn't. And that's always special to me, because when mm-hmm. I started in the business in Charlotte, North Carolina, when Jim Crockett Sr. was still alive, Ole Anderson was a main eventer there. He was with Gene Anderson. So we were talking 1971. That's how about far back my friendship goes with Ole.
Wow.
And we're friends to this day, so you can count the years up. It's a lot of years. And then there have been a lot of changes. But the group with Barry, I think, is the finest group in terms of bell-to-bell, you know, what we could accomplish in the ring as the Four Horsemen as a group.
Was the only group that all of you had championships at the same time, isn't that right?
I never thought about that, but I think you're right.
Nice.
Now, I have a question for you, JJ. Old school fans like me, we always saw you on camera in WCW. But we also know that you played a role behind the scenes in WWE.
Right.
Did it ever upset you that you were never an on-screen character on WWE, or were you even given the opportunity to do that?
Right.
No, to be honest with you, in my autobiography, Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls, the subplot line is McMahon to McMahon. And that really is the story of my career. That when I started, I was in college in 1962. I was my sophomore year, and Vince McMahon Sr. used to come for a big show once a month, and I got to know him on a personal level. And it was later on that that he opened the door for me to put the tights on the first time, which is actually was in Detroit with the Sheik. But my dream as a kid from Trenton, New Jersey, when I used to go to Madison Square Garden, we were talking back Argentina Rock and Carl Von Hess, Dr. Jerry Graham and Eddie Graham, Buddy Rogers, Chief Big Heart. These were the stars in my memories as a kid. And I remember, there are other arenas in the world, depending on what part of the country you live in. If you're in Canada, you say, well, the Garden. Well, they would think of Maple Leaf Garden. And if you lived in Boston, you said Garden. Oh, you mean Boston Garden. Well, to me, Garden was always Madison Square Garden, even though it changed locales several times. That, to me, was the mecca of professional wrestling. And I always thought my dream was to be a wrestler, but I had three criteria that I felt that I had to meet before I could ever say in my own mind that, hey, you finally made it. And one of which was to go to Japan. And when I worked for the Funks in Amarillo, they had a deal with Giant Baba where they were sending American talent over there. So I think it was 74, 75. I made my first of about six or seven trips to Japan for Giant Baba, and it's to this day my favorite place in the world to go. And the other thing was I really felt that I needed to appear in Madison Square Garden. And I think I wrestled in 44 of the 50 continental states, including Hawaii and Alaska. And I thought, if you don't wrestle in Madison Square Garden, how do you say that you were ever a success in the world of professional wrestling? So that came to fruition for me in 1984, which at that time I was working in the office in Florida. And the guy that I really looked up to as my mentor was Eddie Graham, who to me was probably the greatest psychological mind of anybody that I was ever around in half a century in wrestling. He had such an understanding of our business, and I finally got to work for him in the office. And I remember one day he came in and sat across from my desk in a lounge chair. We were just talking about the old days, and I said to him, I said, it just seems like yesterday. I went to the Madison Square Garden to see Eddie with Dr. Jerry, and I dreamed maybe someday I could be at Madison Square Garden too. And at that point, I was more managing late in my career. I'm full-time in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie said, I'm hearing you, it would have meant a lot to you to have wrestled in Madison Square Garden. I said, yeah, it would have, but, I'm in the twilight of my career. And I never gave it another thought. And a day or two when it came by, Eddie came back in, and I remember the dates met it in my mind. He said, on Monday, April 23rd, this is 1984, he said, we have a plane ticket for you. You're going to fly up to New York. You're only going to work Madison Square Garden and fly back. And I know that my jaw had to drop. And Eddie had called Vince McMahon Sr. And this was a couple months before Sr. had passed. He was a heavy smoker, and he was terminally ill with lung cancer. And I had known him from when I broke in as a referee. And when Eddie called him, Sr. said, hey, he used to call me Jimmy. He said, oh, God, I remember him. And he said, I would love to make his dream come true. So he called Jim Barnett, who was just kind of nurturing Vince Jr. into, getting his feet wet. And so they flew me up to the Garden, and I ended up wrestling Tito Santana for the Intercontinental title.
Arriba!
And yeah, April 23rd of 1984, and they were taping then for the Garden Network. So I actually have a copy of that tape, and they didn't really. I was in Florida, and those days the Florida tape I don't think was coming with regularity in New York. So the fans in New York really weren't that familiar. I wasn't a household name. And when they were doing the commentary for the Garden Network, it was Pat Patterson, and, God, I'm trying to think of who he's doing co-commentary with, but they talked about everything but me, because their audience really wouldn't have known who I was. But I was not wanting to embarrass myself. I think it was an 8-9 minute match, and felt that looking back at the tape, for somebody not wrestling every night and having their timing being spot on, I didn't embarrass myself. So that was my dream come true.
Well, JJ, can we go back to what Sean had asked about you working actually behind the scenes with the WWE, and why they didn't choose to bring you on screen as a character, as they did in WCW?
Well, that was late, very late in my career, and I actually was it was right when Crockett Promotions were bought out by Turner, and Tully and Arn. I remember the last match that they worked was in Philadelphia, and they dropped the titles because they were going to go to New York. And Tully and Arn went up there, and I didn't get a call but like 2 weeks later. And they said, well, with the transformation going from Crockett to Turner, I'm not knowing if you're figured in or whatever, but the people in New York had inquired about me, and so Tully said, They can't call you. You got to at least call Pat Patterson as a courtesy call. And so I did. And that's how I got my foot in the door. And I went to New York, and I was at the Marriott Marquis in Manhattan, and Vince McMahon sent his car in to pick me up, and I met him in his house. It was a private meeting because he said, I don't want the people in Atlanta to know, I don't want to cause political problems for you. That if you want to, you can go back and tell them that we met and increase maybe your bargaining power. But he offered me a job, and he said, but with the understanding that at that point, I think I was 44 years old. So I knew that I couldn't put the tights on and keep going out and having special attraction matches with Precious Paul Ellering for forever and forever. So I thought, well, maybe. This is the message that it's time to put that part of the career behind me, because they didn't want me as an on-air talent. And I went to work in the office and ended up there for almost 8 years. And it was like McMahon to McMahon. And I used to think, well, I went from starting my career as a kid in college as a referee with Vince Sr., and now Vince Jr. had just set himself up where he was buying everybody's territory out and buying all the top stars and putting his TV everywhere. And I hear I was being recruited by him. So my whole career had been full circle from McMahon to McMahon, and couldn't get much better than that.
Can you elaborate on your duties behind the scenes with WWE and what you did for any particular creative aspects?
Well, I was involved initially with creative with Vince, Pat Patterson, and myself. And that's what I was hired for. They said, we don't want you as an on-air talent. We're hiring you because of my reputation of being a detailed person and my attention to different creative ideas that you know, maybe others hadn't thought of. And so it was like the total package, other than an on-air talent. And that was the basis by which they made me an offer, and that was not painful for me to walk off of TV, because I knew the time had to come. And here I'm going from McMahon to McMahon, where, you know, the WWE was basically a global brand at that point, and only growing and growing. And here they were recruiting me, and the timing and everything just seemed perfect. And so working around Pat Patterson, who to me is one of the greatest mind, if not the greatest mind, that I've ever worked for or with in all my years in the business. And it was, I'd always worked in creative with all the territories that I worked with, had been creative for Crockett. And now when I went to work for Vince McMahon, here's a company that I used to wear 10 different hats, where I would do travel, I would do this, I would do that.
Cool.
And the WWE / WWF business had professionals that were specialists in advertising and arena booking and all the things that I was involved in, wearing 10 different hats. And so I thought, wow, here's the business really on a grand scale. They've recruited me. I'm coming in and working creative. And all week I would be in the office, you know, jacket and tie, in all aspects of everything that Vince had to do with. And all the creative was actually done on weekends at Vince's home in Greenwich.
Oh, wow.
I would go out there and work all day with Vince and Pat, sit there at their kitchen table and have dinner with them on Saturday night and Sunday night. And just being around Pat and being around Vince was just, wow. I would come home and think, you know, it's hard to believe, looking back, with Vince Sr., now here I am in the tight inner circle with the man who's now basically the owner of the global brand that's only going to continue to grow, and I'm, you know, one of the key people in his entourage.
Nice. Well, can I ask, are you currently watching WWE, and what are your thoughts of the current product?
You know, I don't watch it with any regularity. When you've been in the wrestling business I've got a stack of tapes from anywhere and anywhere spanning my whole career, and my passion, I started as a kid in Trenton, New Jersey, was in love with professional wrestling. And that love, 50 years later, still hasn't waned any, but okay. I, having worked everywhere at the highest level, I just don't think of it where it obsesses me 24/7. So I don't watch it religiously. And every time that I worked for somebody, whether it was with WCW, I never watched Vince's product. It wasn't about, my philosophy always was, whoever is signing my paycheck is going to have my full effort.
There you go.
Creative, everything that I bring to the business, all my experience, 24/7. And it doesn't involve me looking at a competitor's product at that point and in any way having that influence my decisions. I was just using my personal experiences with all the territories and all the greats that I was around to maybe give a fresh approach and not be influenced by, you know, what else was on at the time. So when I was with WCW, I never watched Vince's product. And when I was with Vince, I never watched WCW.
There you go.
JJ, you brought up Paul Ellering earlier. Paul Ellering is back managing the Authors of Pain. Outside of Paul Ellering and Paul Heyman with Brock Lesnar, that's it for managers. What happened to the role of the manager, and do you think that can come back in wrestling in 2018?
Great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. And I have been asked in one form or another about the role of managers, and And it's not a question of people who could step into that role and be effective doing it, which I feel I was. I proudly look back and feel that when I was managing, when I was a full-time wrestler. I took pride in what I did, even though I started very late doing that. And I always thought that every aspect of my career back when I started as a referee in college, and I was a referee for 8 years while I held a job, even after I graduated from college, thinking, well, maybe this is as far as my career is ever going to take me. And then a chance conversation with the original Sheik Eddie Farhat when he would come east to challenge Bruno Sammartino. And my parents lived in Detroit at the time. My father worked for General Motors, retired there, and had moved from Trenton, where I was born, to their central offices in Detroit. And just talking to the Sheik, I said, yeah, my parents live there. And he said, well, you talked about wanting to put the tights on, man. And he says, I promote Detroit and Michigan, Ohio. Come on out. We'll put you in the ring, see what you can do. So that's how I got my foot doing that. And then I'd known Bruno Sammartino for all those years when he was the champion. And the trucking company that I worked for, after about 6 weeks, because Detroit was so heavily unionized, and I working in management, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't touch anything, or somebody would grieve it. And so they said, well, we can't leave you in Detroit. So they ended up moving me to all places, Niles, Ohio, which was, if you've looked at a map, it's below Youngstown at the far east of Ohio. And I thought, oh, man, here I thought I was in Detroit. And that was going to be the beginning of another phase of my career. Now I'm ostracized to Niles, Warren, Ohio, in the middle of nowhere. And I looked at a map one day, and I thought, you know, I'm 90 miles from Pittsburgh. All those years that I'd known Bruno. So I drove down to one of the big shows for Civic Arena and talked to Bruno. And he treated me like I was a long-lost brother when he saw me.
Nice.
And Ace Freeman was kind of running things for him. And I told him, you know, I'd started wrestling and had some experience under my belt. And he turned to Ace Freeman and he said, and then they used to only run, like, I think Thursday, Friday, Saturday, only 3 days a week. And he said, I want him working starting this week. And he said, I want him working every night, even if you have to add a match on the card. So I ended up getting experience working with really, really great talent that was around Pittsburgh, and did so for a year. I met Jim Grabmeier, who was from Springfield, Ohio, and Jim used to work around home for the winter months. And the summer months, he would go to Charlotte and work for back when Jim Crockett Sr. was alive, because they would do a lot of outdoor shows and expand their roster. So that one year, he went to Charlotte. All of a sudden, I get a call out of the blue. And Grabmeier says, you know, you talked about it was your dream to become a full-time wrestler. And he said, they're looking for talent. And just based on my recommendation, sight unseen, I showed him a picture. They'll book you. And this was like on a Friday or Saturday. And he said, you can be booked as of Monday. In fact, they would like for you to be here Monday. And I thought, oh, wow. So I packed everything that I that I owned into an old beat-up Chevy. And I remember I'd never been south of Richmond, Virginia, being a Jersey boy.
Oh, wow.
And now I was going to Charlotte, North Carolina. That just seemed Woo. Like the other side of the world. Drove all the way through in one night, and on that Monday morning, I found the card for Charlotte Park Center, and I was against Gene Anderson, and that was the beginning of like a 2+ year run that changed my whole career.
Now, I got one final question for you, JJ. One of the good things about having the WWE Network, if anyone doesn't know who JJ Dillon is, they can go back and watch the network. What Four Horsemen, either match or memory, would you direct a new fan to check out if they wanted to learn more about what J.J. Dillon and the Four Horsemen were about? Because I have two that stick out in my mind. One was the first War Games, where you got hurt, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I was
going to say, every morning when I get up and shave, I look in the mirror at that hump on my shoulder.
Ooh.
Where,
oh, man.
I was up on Ole's shoulders, and it was a cage match, and here comes Hawk of the Road Warriors about to come off and clothesline me, and he's having to crouch down because the cage had a cage ceiling.
Yeah.
And I'm up on the shoulders of Ole, and I thought, my God, he's launching himself. I'm almost in the middle of the ring, and there were two rings for the War Games at that point, butted against each other. And so I thought, this is not a place that I want to be. And about the time he launched, I'm trying to get down from having my head taken off. And as powerful as Ole was, you know, he had a hard time controlling my weight at 250 pounds or so. And as I'm coming down, he can't hold me. And I'm thinking, I'm going to break my neck. And at the last second, I turned my head and buried my shoulder. And it was the worst injury I ever suffered in the business. I didn't break it. Probably would have been better if I broke it, but I separated it and still had that hump where I was incapacitated for 6 weeks in a sling. And but that was the one, that was one of the early war games.
Yeah.
And so picking a favorite match, I agree with you. The war games is one, and the other one only because of the location more than the fact of the significance of the match was my only appearance as a wrestler in Madison Square Garden in 1984 when I wrestled Tito Santana.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
And I was going to say, as far as memory goes, or memories, the Four Horsemen beatdown of Dusty Rhodes when you slammed the hand in the car door.
Yeah.
Out
in the parking lot.
Yes.
What, the one where they made him think he was going to join the Horsemen? That one?
No.
There was a deal where Dusty was the man, and I remembered, well, you know, we were loosely coming together as the Four Horsemen, and obviously at the top of the pecking order across the ring from us was Dusty, and so we were looking at Sam Houston and Jimmy Vangette and his entourage of people, and I remember thinking, well, instead of starting at the bottom and picking them off one at a time, let's go for the big dog. So we laid an ambush outside of Crockett Promotions, and when Dusty went by in that red Mercedes convertible, we laid in behind him, and when we pulled off, we cut him off so he couldn't back out, got out, and I don't know if it was Ole or Barry had the 2x4, that had such impact that I remember people saying that they wanted to call law enforcement and have us, you know, have criminal charges filed. That was the impact of that. And we got mileage out of that for a whole year.
I was going to say, you guys sold a lot of tickets from that one angle.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, speaking of tickets.
That's right. so you can see our guest, J.J. Dillon, along with Ric Flair, Barry Windham, Arn Anderson, and Tully Blanchard all together this Saturday.
Four Horsemen reunion, and we're talking outside of Maryland and outside of Baltimore. And
D.C., Virginia, everywhere, yeah.
Maryland Championship Wrestling, and it's this coming Saturday, depending when you're catching this interview. I'm talking about Saturday, February 17th.
Nice.
At the MCW Arena, Maryland Championship Wrestling, and I'm going to be there starting at 4 o'clock. We're going to be signing for the fans prior to the matches. And Baltimore was just a great, great town for me. And to come back there, it's like my career going full circle. So.
Oh,
nice.
Man, it's awesome.
Yeah, for more information, visit mcwprowrestling.com. You know, when the show starts, JJ, feel free to stop by the commentating table if you want. Say a word or two.
Yeah, get on the mic, man. People want to hear from you.
That's a deal. You guys just wave to me, so I know the timing is good, and
nice.
I would be happy to come in there and join in and just say hi to all the fans.
Nice. Timing is always good, sir.
We will make that happen, definitely.
That's awesome. Great, because I always say that whatever success I've had in the business is because the fans opened the doors for me.
Nice.
So I would love to join you for a little bit and, again, be able to say hi to all the fans.
Hey, JJ, if you could cut a quick promo for us, let us know who you are, and you're listening to Below the Belt Show. Throw out a Four Horsemen or a JJ or a Ric Flair catchphrase, maybe a woo or whatever you want at the end.
All right. Okay. Well, three. This is JJ Dillon, the leader of the original Four Horsemen. Hold on just a second. Let's do it again.
Mm-hmm.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the original Four Horsemen, and you're joining me on Below the Belt. And I'm on with Al, Sean, and Mark. And hey, just remember, woo!
Awesome. Nice.
Awesome. Can you do it one more time? It's Martin, Chachi, Sean, and Al.
Say it again, Martin.
Martin, Chachi, Sean, and Al.
Martin. Chauncey?
Sean.
Sean.
And
Martin,
Chachi.
Sean, Mark, and Al.
Yeah.
And Chachi.
Chachi.
Chachi?
Chachi, like Chachi. Joni loves Chachi.
Yeah. Martin, Chachi, Sean, Al.
I got you. Okay.
All right.
Let's do it again. This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the original Four Horsemen and a multi-Hall of Fame member, and you're joining me along with Martin, Al, Sean, and Chachi on Below the Belt.
Woo!
Crushed it.
Awesome. Can you do a woo, awesome. J.J.? Can you do a woo? Yeah.
We'll do one more, and I'll add the woo.
No, woo. Just the woo.
Just the woo.
Just the woo.
There it is.
JJ, thanks for calling in.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. Enjoyed being with you. And hopefully a lot of people will come to Baltimore this Saturday to say hi.
Yeah, man.
And
we'll see you Saturday.
I'll stop by your announce booth.
That's Sean over here. He's our MCW guy.
A little bit on your commentary.
Yes, and happy Valentine's Day.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm at the age where... What is it, Valentine's Day? I can't remember.
I like to call it Singles Awareness Day.
I like that. I'm going to have to remember that, and I'll give you credit for saying it. All right, guys. Thank you.
Take care, JJ.
Bye-bye.